Well, we hope you enjoyed the tribute to Dolly Parton, which we just aired. Now we'll switch gears and we'll get to the talk show portion of your afternoon. It's Vox Pop on this Tuesday, January 5th, 2021. Yeah, you know, it's the season of the snow and the sleet. And here to tell you about it is our buddy Jason Goff. He's a meteorologist, formerly on News Channel 13. He now runs a forecasting website. It's a good one, jasonsweather.com. So if you have a question about dew points, the wind chill, weather patterns, just don't bring up the polar vortex. He gets very irritated. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. If you're lucky, he'll sing a few Dolly Parton songs for you, but I'm not guaranteeing that. Again, the number is 800-348-2551. Weather with Jason Goff coming up. Oh, hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We are joined today by meteorologist Jason Goff, who is here to answer your weather questions. You have seen Jason on the airwaves. You have heard Jason on the airwaves. He now runs a forecasting website at jasonsweather.com. If you have a weather question, always great to have this guy on the show. 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. That's voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Meteorologist Jason Goff, Happy New Year. Welcome back, buddy.
Happy New Year to you, Ray. Great to talk to you, although I think I had a bad connection when we started, because did you say something about me singing Dolly Parton? Are you aware of the damage that I could cause to your audience if I did that?
Yeah, I withdraw the question. Yeah, don't worry about that. We'll press on. No, the previous show had an interesting, rather incongruous for public radio section on Dolly Parton. So go figure. That's what happens here in public radio.
I love it.
You know, man, so you were on a few days before that massive snow dump, and you said, hey, listen, we don't know. If this thing turns a little bit, our area is going to get whomped, but we're not sure yet. And it really was about 8 or 10 hours before you guys figured out that, oh, my gosh, this could be bad.
Well, and there was another element to that whole thing that was fascinating to watch. As you know, I'm a big weather geek, so I just look into all these things. And so, yeah, it did shift a little bit, but we also had a lot of extra juice. And I don't mean we had plenty of liquid in the atmosphere, but plenty of energy, too, even in the low levels of the atmosphere. So the snowfall totals, like north of the Twin Bridges, that was a bust, man. I mean, they got absolutely clobbered across Saratoga County, up in Washington County. Cambridge, I think, if off the top of my head, ended up with like 40 inches.
Wow.
And so as amazing as that was, the even more amazing thing is that with that storm, we ended up officially with 22.9 inches of snow. The storm that we got last December, if you remember, we had that the first couple of days of the month, was 22.7, so basically the same amount. But the difference was the storm that we had last year, it snowed in Albany for 38 hours straight, which was a pretty impressive feat.
Yep.
This storm, we only had snow for about 16 hours. So we had the same amount of snow in less than half the time, and the average was like 1.2 inches an hour. There were some spots, especially down in the southern tier, but even as you headed up into the Catskills, the Helderbergs, that we're talking like 4 or 5 inches of snow an hour. I mean, that's intense for a lake effect band. So that was, meteorologically speaking and everything else, that thing was really something else.
And, you know, on days like that, on mornings like that, that's when you question your career choice to go into broadcasting or to go into something where you got to be at work. It's I got stuck in the entranceway to our parking lot for an hour that morning and had to dig myself. I was right there. Yeah. But yeah, so two nights ago, not too bad. I was joking at the end of yesterday's show that I was going to complain to you about the weather, but it really was a minor dig out at 5:45 yesterday.
Yeah, not a big deal. I mean, we got it. You know, it was pretty yesterday morning. It was gorgeous out there with all the snow. It was the perfect amount of snow to liquid ratio, so it stuck to all the tree limbs, and it really was very, very picturesque. Unless you're not a snow fan, then it just kind of looked like crummy old snow. But it certainly was a nice, pretty scene. And then, you know, we don't generally talk about forecasts a whole lot on this, but I will tell you this week, weather, not much going on but the rent, man. There's not a whole lot happening weather-wise.
Well, that's good.
Things look like they could start to get, yeah, we'll actually get into some sun. I mean, this is, like, if you were to bring somebody up from, I don't know, West Palm or the Outer Banks or whatever that had never been up here before in January, you could just bring them outside and go, well, this is it.
Yep.
So, you know, kind of cloudy and chilly and whatever, but we'll get into some sun later on. The pattern next week looks to get a little bit more active. We'll see how that all shakes out. The euro, actually, I was just looking at the morning run from this morning, is trying to bring us a pretty good storm here the middle of next week. And all of everybody that always listens to this show knows that that means absolutely nothing at this point in time, but we'll just keep an eye on it. But it does look to get a little bit more active next week, so we'll see.
Meteorologist Jason Goff joins us today. Our number is 800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But once again, that number is 800-348-2551. A couple of emails here, and then we will maybe take a break and then hit the phones. This one's from Patty. Patty writes, "We have a place on a lake in Fulton County. It's a smaller lake, 4 miles long, and we often notice that the lake is calm, like glass in the morning. But frequently by midday, the condition changes and the lake becomes more active and choppy. Is there a weather-related reason for that to happen so frequently?"
Yeah, and it's not only smaller ponds and lakes and stuff like that. I mean, the same thing happens on Lake George or anywhere else. Generally, you know, everything really quiets down at night. Unless we've got a storm system that's coming or going, everything quiets down at night, and especially in the warmer weather, right? Because you don't have the sun heating the ground up and getting that whole wind machine going. So it's a case of what we call differential heating. Because the water and the land, and we've talked about this as it relates to like sea breezes, the land and the water heat at different rates, and so things can get going there. And then when you're talking about, I'm not sure exactly where that lake is in Fulton County, but as you get on the northern side of Fulton County, you're really sort of in the foothills of the Adirondacks, so you can get up into elevation, so you're a little more exposed to a breeze. So there's lots of different reasons for that, potentially just on any given day, but for the most part, it's just mornings are calmer, and then things tend to get going in the afternoon, especially in the summertime, unless we've got a big, you know, ridge of high pressure overhead, and it's nice and calm all day. But generally, that's a pretty common thing, Patty.
This one is from Elise. Could you please explain? I'm going to say this improperly, I'm sure. Could you please explain the difference between a microburst and a derecho?
Derecho. Oh, okay.
Did I say it wrong?
We've said those. Remember, we've talked about those, the derechos?
Oh, derecho. I thought it was derecho.
Yeah, well,
Joshua
that's how it's
fought
spelled.
The Battle of Derecho. Okay, so it's a derecho. All right, what's the difference between a microburst and a derecho?
Oh, that's a long list. But I will. The short version is the microburst is something that is exactly what it implies. It's a very localized gust of wind. If you want to think of it, it's actually a column of wind that comes out of a collapsing thunderstorm. Those are the things that they hit the ground and they spread out radially. So you can, the Weather Service will go out and they'll do a survey and they might just see, you know, let's say it happens in the woods and all the trees are just folded outward. You can kind of even tell where the core of that was. The derecho is, we had a version of that in October, if you remember. Hopefully everybody remembers that thing. That puppy was open for business when that came through here.
Yeah.
And that was a unique one for us because derechos are more common in the summertime, but they are basically a cluster of thunderstorms that, in essence, feed off of themselves, and they move very quickly. They can cover a bunch of real estate in a short amount of time. There was a derecho, I have to look it up. I think it was like 2012. And that thing started in the Midwest around like Western Illinois, and it made it all the way off of the Mid-Atlantic coast, went through DC, tore up a bunch of stuff in Virginia. And all that happened in like 12 hours. And wow. The winds out of those things were 75 plus miles an hour. So that's a huge, huge difference. The size is the main thing. I mean, microbursts can cause a lot of damage, but in a very small area. Derechos, they can tear up a lot of stuff and just keep on wreaking havoc as they go.
All right, two more emails, and then we'll take a quick break here. Just Christine and Waterville wanted to thank you for your online presence And I'll second that. The website's very good. How's it going?
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It's going well. I've scaled back a little bit just in terms of what I'm doing with the Times Union and stuff, and kind of doing weather as an as needed basis. So like this week, I'm relatively quiet. The mentality is no news is good news. And if you hear from me, then you know there's something that we need to be aware of. So that's been good. I've been working on my other my PPE distribution business has taken up a lot more of my time. So I appreciate that. But yeah, it's been going great. Emails still go out every Friday morning. Still partnered up with my pals at the Times Union. They're great as well. And of course, always Ray, love to hang out with you on the radio. Although I am still, and I'll keep reminding you of this, I think this is our sixth or eighth show since this stupid pandemic, and I'm still waiting for that Scotch, brother. So we got to figure that out.
Are you a single malt guy or a blend?
Well, I don't want to sound like a snob, but if I had to choose, single malt is the way to go, I believe.
I'm with you there. All right, one email, and we only have about 30, 40 seconds here before the break. This one is from CB, and CB says, it's Chris in South Amherst, Mass. For those of us who are ski nuts this season, it's been kind of a dud so far. Care to comment on the jet stream and its effect on snowfall in New England and upstate New York?
Well, we're in this La Nina pattern. We talked about this quite a bit in our last show. The La Nina pattern is not a death sentence as far as skiers are concerned with, you know, having a decent snow. Obviously, we had this big old storm a couple of weeks ago. But generally speaking, La Nina years, if you had to bet, you know, you and I both like to place wagers,
yes,
Ray.
We do.
If we were in Vegas and we had to bet on whether or not a La Nina year in this area is going to be above or below average snowfall, 2 out of 3 times is going to be below, but that still gives you a 1 in 3 chance. And as I said, with next week looking to get a little bit more active, we'll see how that translates to us. But I would say to skiers, I hear you. It's only the 5th of January, so just chill. You got plenty of time yet.
Meteorologist Jason Goff is our guest today. We will rev up the phones in a moment. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be right back. Fox Pop, it's weather today with Jason Goff. Our number is 800-348-2551. And to the phones we go. Bill in Western Massachusetts, you're first. Go ahead, Bill.
Ray, thank you very much for taking the call. I love your program. Listen to it every time I have a chance.
Thank you, man.
I'm a sugar maker, and at this time of year, I follow the long-range weather forecast that I get out of NOFA. And they're calling for above average for the 8 to 14 day and then for out 30 days as well. So above average temperatures. But the question I've never been able to get answered is, what are typical average temperatures in this area? And we're in northwestern Massachusetts, right up next to the Vermont border.
That's a good question. Yeah, the Weather Prediction Center, they put out they do all kinds of things. Obviously, they're under the NOAA umbrella. So the Weather Prediction Center will put out a 6 to 10 day outlook. They'll put an 8 to 14 day outlook, a 30 day outlook. And then NOAA puts out their big seasonal outlooks, which, as we've said many times on this program and elsewhere, like seasonal outlooks for this part of the country don't really, they don't have a lot of value to them. We'll put it to you that way. So, you know, depending on where you are, I understand, you know, roughly where you are, you try to translate the Albany averages to that, because unfortunately we don't have climate stations everywhere. So you can generally say, you know, if in the next 8 to 14 days temperatures are going to be above average, you know, you're going to be looking at, let's say, you know, mid to upper 30s during the day, 20s at night, which would be anywhere from 5 to 15 degrees above average. That's just, it's ballparking it. But I will tell you, this winter too, especially for all of the maple sugar or maple syrup folks and everything, it's such a huge, wonderful industry that we have here. This type of pattern that we're in, this La Nina pattern, is going to be more conducive overall to above average temperatures. That's not to say that, you know, we're going to be able to wear shorts around here in 2 weeks, but you understand, it's just one of those, because of the way that the atmosphere has set up for us this winter, we are going to see, I think you're going to see more and more of those outlooks say above average as opposed to below or even at average. So just something to think about. You guys typically start to get really geared up when, in about mid-February, late February?
Well, we've actually tapped more than once in late January. We've made our whole crop in some years recently in the month of February. We almost never make syrup into March. So things are really getting earlier. But so is there a site where these average highs and lows can be found by Googling or going to some website?
The problem is that, like I said, there are a limited number of places that have actual averages. So, like, for example, in the Albany television market, which is much smaller than the WAMC listening area, that's in essentially the Albany Weather Service forecast office area. The only climate sites that we have officially are Bennington, Pittsfield, Poughkeepsie, Albany, and Glens Falls. Now, so what I would suggest is, and this would be an average for you, you can check out the averages for Bennington and Pittsfield. May not be as useful, but maybe you could weigh the Bennington average a little bit heavier based on where you said you are. If you want to email me, I will send you some links, and I'll be able to do that. So just email me at jason@jasonsweather.com. And I'll be happy to give you whatever information I can find for you.
All right, that's great. Jason@jasonsweather.com. Thank you very much for the call. The number is 800-348-2551. It is Weather Today with meteorologist Jason Goff. And let's go to Chris in Housatonic. Chris.
Hey, Jason. It's Chris calling. I got a question for you. Why doesn't Paul Kiano on Channel 13 give the forecast for the Northwest Territories and also Hawaii?
Oh, boy.
You know what? I don't talk to Paul. I don't. That's all I'll say. So okay. You would have to ask him.
All right.
I don't know.
You know, to be fair, you don't get that much time. And, you know, if you're doing a local forecast, I mean, Hawaii is about as unlocal as you can get, right? If you're doing
That is true, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I'm sure that the TV consultants are not big fans of that. So, yeah, you'll have to ask him. I have no idea.
All right, fair enough. Thank you for the call, Chris. 800-348-2551 is the number. And Jason Goff is our guest today as we talk weather. Let's go to our buddy Nina in East Hoosick. Hello, Nina.
Hey, Happy New Year to you both.
And to you.
I've been waiting for the show to come on because, you know, I'm sure there's this saying, something like red sky at night, sailor's delight, ring around the moon, rain soon. Well, last night I happened to have this, you know, big skyscape where I am, big open sky, and I stepped out and it was just breathtaking. And it wasn't the kind of halo around the moon that, you know, you sometimes see. It was an absolutely perfect circle. And if I were to measure it, you know, of course, you know, I'm here and the moon is very far away, but, you know, you could say it was, you know, an arm's distance from the moon, of course, much, much farther. In other words, a huge, completely perfect circle around the moon. And the bandwidth looks from the Earth, this is a cloud band, you know, from the Earth, it looks like it's maybe, you know, 6 or 12 inches across. Of course, it's much bigger. But what causes that absolutely perfect circle around the moon? And I have another question if I have time, but
sure, yeah.
I'm waiting to talk.
Okay. So, in essence, what you're seeing is light that is being refracted through clouds that are coming in. So, just like anything else, I mean, I'm not drawing a direct comparison here, but like, you know, when you see a rainbow or a sun dog, which we've talked about before, you know, light will shine through, and then you have particles in the clouds, be the raindrops or ice crystals or whatever. And they'll scatter that light and you'll see different colors and things. So what you're seeing with the moon, obviously the light is not nearly as intense as it is with the sun, but it's still there. So you're getting a reflection and a refraction of these clouds that are coming in. And to your point about, you know, those sayings about, you know, the ring around the moon, rain coming soon and all that, that's obviously a big time generalization. But in essence, what you're talking about is some kind of a system coming in from the west or the south or whatever, And so you're able to see the light that is reflecting off of those high clouds. There's ice crystals in there, so they might help to reflect it a little bit more and refract. So that's essentially what you're seeing. It is pretty cool because, you know, you remember as a little kid, you see a big ring around the moon, and then the next day or 2 days later, you have a big snowstorm or something.
Yep.
But that's generally how that all works.
Right, but I'm not really referring to that, although I appreciate that. My question is, there were no other clouds around. There was only this marvelous, huge circle, not close to the moon, right? So you could say far from the moon, but a perfect circle around it. Why do you get this perfect circle? That's all there was. There were no other clouds around. It wasn't hazy. That's all you got. That's what I'm trying to understand.
The ring should be the same size every time, right, Jason?
Well,
no,
it depends. If you have, if you have, essentially, those were clouds. I mean, you just couldn't see them because, A, it's dark and the clouds were, I wasn't outside last night, so I'm not sure how that all came to pass. But in essence, you have to have something that's going to help create that circle, because certainly you've been outside on a completely cloudless night and there's no circle around the moon. So you have these higher clouds initially that perhaps were coming in. I mean, we've been socked in all day here today. So there had to be some kind of a real thin, high cloud canopy that was coming in. And just the orientation of those clouds and where you were in the moon and all of that, that all came together. But you can't have that circle unless you have something that is helping to create that circle.
All right, Nina, why don't you do your second question here, because we're going to move on here. So, go ahead.
I understand. I just want to say that I understood there were clouds, but it was just that all you could see was this perfect circle and you couldn't see anything else. So I guess it's the dissemination of the light through those clouds. The other question is, when you look at clouds and you see that, let's say, let's call it the underside of the cloud, you get like a flotilla of clouds, and you see the underside is very dark and the upper side is very light. Is that caused by the density of the water vapor in the bottom part and less density on top? Or what's causing that?
Yeah, and it's actually not water vapor specifically. It's actually just plain old water. So if you get, you know, we'll typically see that in the transitional seasons where you have these, you know, you might even have a bright blue sky and bright white cloud tops, and then the bottoms of these clouds are almost black. That is, those clouds are pretty much saturated in that level, and those are the ones that'll throw a few showers here and there. They'll be real localized. But, yeah, that's what that is. It's just a matter of, and almost kind of back to the moon thing, the reason they're so dark is because the sunlight can't penetrate those. And so that's what you're seeing. It's a pretty high concentration of water down there at the bases of those clouds.
Thank you, people. Have a good day.
Happy New Year, Nina. Thanks
you
for
too.
The call. Interesting, Jason Goff. I've heard, you know, red sky at night, sailor's delight, but I've never heard ring around the moon, rain soon. That's kind of cool.
It's a new one. Hey,
yeah. Did you ever hear that
Tuesday,
before?
You know?
I've never heard that. You know, my father, you know, to be clear, full disclosure, my father was not a meteorologist. But the one he always said, and I don't know where he got this, red sky at night, sailors take fright, red sky at morning, put out the awning.
Now that one I have not heard.
No? All right. Well,
I have not.
Maybe we can look at, maybe you can put it on your website. Burton and Amherst. Burton, you're on.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
I'm looking at a story in the Washington Post today from the Capital Weather Gang saying that a sudden stratospheric warming event has pushed the polar vortex off the North Pole, sending Arctic air on the move. They say the polar vortex is splitting in two, which may lead to weeks of wild winter weather, especially in our area and then along the, you know, Northern Europe. Japan got hit with 7 feet of snow yesterday, and that's included in this group. But up and down the Atlantic coast, and especially New England, and I was just wondering if you had read that or if you have any comment. And I'll take my
answers
off.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
Okay, no, that's a fairly it's a fairly common thing, even in these La Nina years. I will also tell you that the folks that write the weather content for the Washington Post are fantastic. I know a couple of those guys from my time living in D.C., and they're great. So, yeah, it's essentially that was a fancy way of saying we're going to get some colder air shots. The polar vortex, when it stays up north, the winds are really screaming around the periphery of the thing, or basically in essence what it is. It's when the winds slow down that the polar vortex can kind of droop down a little bit. And it might hit, it might show up here in the Northeast. It might show up into Northern Europe. It might show up in parts of Asia, but you especially will see it. The polar vortex is still very difficult to forecast, not only when or if that's going to happen, but where it's going to go. So we just kind of keep an eye on it. You can look at it. You can look at trends in the atmosphere, in the models, and just kind of get an idea as to whether or not, well, we may have to get some cold. And then from there, forecasting wise, you say, well, are we going to have some kind of moisture to go with it? And then we're going to get snow. There's lots of moving parts, but what she was saying, it sounded alarming, but it's not. It's just a normal thing. And as Ray and I have talked about, some dopey TV consultant came up with that term a long time, you know, a few years ago, polar vortex.
Yeah.
And everybody, that's what they talk about all the time. It sounds like, you know, the end of days, but it's not. It happens every year.
No, end of days is the bombogenesis, right?
Oh, yeah, that's true. Good point.
You know, first of all, a couple things. One, your underlying bitterness toward TV consultants still hasn't waned, and I appreciate that. Two, getting back to your point about the polar vortex, why is it so difficult to predict?
Well, it's because you have a lot of variables, and you don't have a whole lot of way to measure those variables just because of where this thing sits up in the up on top of the planet, basically. So, you know, and there are so many other things that are going on. So when those winds slow down, and sometimes not only can they slow down, they can actually reverse course, then it's sort of like, you know, let me try to come up with an analogy here real quickly, if I might be able to do that.
Sure.
I probably can't, but I don't want to waste your time. But it's a matter of, like, if you're spinning something really fast, and let's say it's like a bowl of Jell-O or something like that, and then you stop that spinning or you slow it down or whatever, and there might be fractures in the Jell-O that you're not even aware of. So it's kind of like, well, is it going to slide to the right off the table, or is it going to slide in my lap over here? Kind of those things. So it's just difficult. And not only that, as I said, with all those variables, you know, it's just a matter of trying to figure everything out as we're learning the science. I mean, even the science of El Nino and La Nina has not been around for a real long time, really since only the early 80s. And we're getting, you know, I shouldn't say we because I have nothing to do with it, but meteorologists, the men and women that study this, have gotten good at it. And obviously with the polar vortex, they're doing the same because there are other implications besides weather forecasting. You're also talking about the effects of global warming and climate change, which, again, we don't normally discuss on this show.
Meteorologist Jason Goff is our guest. I got to tell you, man, the analogy of the fractured Jell-O is just, it was, I could understand that. And also,
all right,
fractured Jell-O is a hell of a name for a band. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. Enjoy the music of fractured Jell-O. We'll be right back. Kid, of course. That's Dizzy Gillespie, Lalo Schifrin in the group, and not the band Fractured Jell-O. That's a different band. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Meteorologist Jason Goff is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. One email here, Jason, and then back to the phones. This was is from Larry. Larry says, here we go, Jason, get ready. What is the difference between relative humidity and dew point?
Oh, this is one of my favorite questions. I wish I could get away from relative humidity when it comes to all this stuff. So relative humidity is the amount of, I'll phrase it this way first. The warmer a parcel of air is, the more water vapor it can hold. So if you have and I'm just going to be making up numbers as we go here, just so that you can kind of get the idea. So if you have a parcel of air that's 80 degrees, and the relative humidity of that is 50%, that means that it could hold another 50% in terms of before it would start to rain or be saturated. A dew point temperature is actually specifically defined as the temperature at which water vapor condenses into a liquid. It is a much better way to describe, especially for people and dogs and things like that, what it feels like outside. Because you can be, you know, like I used to live in Corpus Christi, Texas, right? So the temperature there could be 94 degrees and the relative humidity would be 44%.
Yeah.
And so if you think about that on its merit, you're like, oh, 44%, that's nothing. But the dew point is 75. Those are the days up here where everybody is, well, not everybody, because I love that weather, but I know I'm in the great minority in that regard.
Yeah.
But when we have a day up here where it's 94 and 75, you have a lot of unhappy people. So it's a much better way to describe and convey what it actually feels like outside. But it's also a good thing when you're coming into forecasts, because, for example, if I'm looking at the opportunity for some thunderstorms in May in a transitional season, for example, our dew points are in the 50s. It's going to be, yeah, we're going to get some storms, but if we get into dew points into the 60s or even in the upper 60s at 70 degrees, we know those storms are going to be more open for business just because they have more fuel. So it just tells you a lot more about what you need to know.
One more email here, and I thought this was very interesting, and it's a compliment for you, Jason. This is from Diane. Diane says, I'd like to mention that I enjoy listening to Jason's weather reports. You have a great radio voice. I'm a sign language interpreter and sometimes interprets radio news for clients. One time I had to interpret for the previous meteorologist that was so quick I could not process what he was saying. However, your cadence is perfect and easy to listen to. Isn't that nice?
Well, that is very nice. I mean, look, I'm no Ray Graff, not even close.
Well, I mean, who is?
I appreciate the compliment just the same. Of course, that's what I'm saying.
Right. You know. Yeah, I'm not even Ray
Graff. I get
it. All right, let's go to the phones again. Nick in Woodstock. Nick, you're on.
Hey, Ray, love the show. I just started listening very frequently, and I love all the guests. Another compliment throw for everybody.
All right.
So I wanted to chime in on the sugar guy from earlier. There is a website called Weather Underground, and it's great. I've been using it for years. There's a 10-day forecast that shows the moon and the graphs of everything and the precipitation and the dew point and the humidity and the cloud cover. So I just want to throw that in there.
I like that one, too. Although, Jason, and maybe you can tell me if I'm wrong here, and you, of course, look at weather numbers from all the listening spots and all the measuring spots. When I try to get my forecast together for the morning news, I will often get a few weather conditions throughout the region. I think a lot of times, though, they'll pick the nearest bigger site. So if I pick, let's say, Big Moose, New York, or Inlet, New York, there may not be a weather reading there. They're just going to pick the closest one. Am I wrong, Jason?
Yeah, you're going to get like Watertown or Utica or something like that. But
right.
Weather Underground is great. If you really wanted to do some digging, I haven't used the site a ton in terms of averages and stuff like that, but it's a wonderful network. I've used it. I've done some forensic meteorology. And in doing that, if I'm trying to find out some specifics, because you have all of these folks that have these weather stations and they're tied into this network, and you could, Ray, to use your example of like Big Moose or Inlet,
yeah.
I'm sure that there are some weather stations that are, if not in those locations, because those are a little bit more well-known in terms of the Adirondacks and the Western Adirondacks, but you could find a station certainly that's close enough. And you could even do, you know, check out, sample a couple of different ones to kind of get an average if you needed to be that specific about it. So, yeah, Weather Underground is great. But as far as the official climate records and things go, they only use the official NOAA stations.
Hey, Nick, thanks for the
call. I do have a question, actually.
Go ahead, man.
Wait.
Yeah,
I do have a good question.
Go ahead.
So a few weeks ago, we had a big blizzard. So there was like 2-ish feet of snow on the ground. But it was so windy, there was not a flake in the trees. So when they measure snow accumulation, how does that work in terms of
interesting?
How much?
Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Yep, that's a good question. I actually have on my website there. I wrote an article about how to measure snow, and you use a snowboard, Wind is a little bit of a different animal because you have to take different measurements, more measurements. You're going to be doing averages. Ideally, what you want is no wind, and the snow is just going to fall straight down on your board. You measure it, you wipe it, and then you add up the total at the end of the deal. But when it is windy, right, it does become a lot more challenging because you also, it's not like you can have it in a box because you want to make sure that you get the snow falling naturally as possible. So you, in essence, with wind, you can do the best you can on your snowboard if you're that into it. But then the other piece is to, you know, kind of take some averages over a larger area, and that'll give you an approximate amount of snow.
Good. Amazing.
Yeah. Hey, man, thanks for the call. You know, it's funny. I emailed you, Jason, during the storm or just when it was done and said, how much did we get? And you said, I took my average and we got 28 inches where you were. And I was across town, and I swear we got at least 32, 33. Is it possible for a difference of a mile or two as the crow flies to make it that big of a difference in snow?
Yeah, absolutely. It happens all the time, and especially with this particular storm, like we talked about in the beginning of the show, we're talking about, like, there were certain areas where the atmosphere just provided a little bit more energy, so you had a little bit better of a snowfall rate. And yeah, my snow total here, I talked to the folks at the Weather Service office about it because they had a few different readings from in and around Del Mar.
Yeah.
And mine was the lowest, and I actually went to a couple different spots, and the wind here is now, I'm a little bit protected from the wind here, so that it wasn't so much of a factor, but I checked four different locations and I came up with my average. So yeah, you can get that. You see that all the time.
That's amazing.
So that's why, you know, when you put out a snowfall accumulation forecast map, you know, with the little contours on it and all that, those are really just general ideas because you're always going to have, you know, little variations within those little contours where somebody might get, you know, even in Del Mar, for example, you're going to get more out in Clarksville.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
And you're not going that much farther out. It's just that you have a higher elevation. So there's lots of little nuances that go into that.
Meteorologist Jason Goff joins us. Back to the phones at 800-348-2551. Neil in Lake Creek. Neil, you're on.
Yes, sir, gentlemen. Great show. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
Jason, I'm curious about climate numbers that are reported in weather forecasts and by meteorologists. Do those numbers, when they report the averages of temperature or precip, are those only for a limited time window, like 20, 30 years, or are those, do those go all the way back as far as records have been taken?
Good question. The short answer is they do. The climate record goes back 30 years, and in fact, we're going to have a new climate record and it's updated every 10. So we're going to have a new climate record that will be put out by the Weather Service here pretty soon, if it's not already. I haven't checked. So, you know, whereas before we had 1980 to 2000, so that's 80, 92, whatever, however the numbers work. My mind is all over the place today. But
years.
Then it gets updated every 30 years. So it would be all of the climate records now would go up to 2020. Hmm. And we'll start a new one this year in that sense. So it'll be 1980, gotcha. 1990, 2000, and so on. And then it gets updated again to 90, 2000, 2010. And then so on. So that's how that works. But then the records themselves the records themselves, they go back, and that varies in terms of certain snowfall records go back to 1874. Temperature records can go back to 1820. Other records may not have started being kept until the 1950s. So that all depends. But yeah, in terms of saying, hey, today the average high is 32 degrees, that's the 30-year average calculated over the last 30 years. And then 10 years from now, that'll get updated again.
You want to follow up?
Wouldn't that then mute the impacts of climate change if you're only reporting a limited 20 or 30-year window?
No, actually, it actually goes in the other direction, because what we have found, there's also on my site, you can see there's a global warming climate change page on there. And I'm connected with these folks called Climate Central. And they put out all kinds of graphics and things. And the temperature in Albany since 1970. And even before that, but the temperature is from 1970. You can just see the graph, and it is going up. And snowfall has come down. So you'll see, that's why I'm curious to see how it was. But 10 years ago, when they updated the 30-year average, our average temperature went up a little bit, and the average snowfall went down a little bit. So, and that's the whole thing about, you know, global warming and climate change in general, is that, you know, it's a relatively slow process, at least in the beginning. As things accelerate, we'll see what happens. But because you can look at the climate record from, let's say, 1940 to 1970, and then compare that from 1960 to 1990, and you are going to see a difference between those.
Jason Goff is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. Mike is in Glens Falls. Mike.
Hi, thank you very much. I have a gripe with your TV weather colleagues there.
Oh, no.
I've noticed in a lot of storms, they'll tell you something like, the storm will be in Glens Falls at 2:01, then in South Glens Falls at 2:03, and in Saratoga at 2:05, et cetera. I don't see the benefit of those time factors, and I've kind of half jokingly said, if the storm comes before the time they announce, I ought to sue their behind.
Wow.
What's the purpose?
I mean, the National Weather Service does that, though. You can listen to the National Weather Service.
I sue them, too.
Yeah, all right, fair enough. Well, you made me make some money. Jason, what do you think?
Well, there's a couple things. One, it's just based on – it's just straight-up math, really, that you can say, all right, well, we're looking at this line. It's moving at, whatever, 40 miles an hour. This is the direct. This is its heading, so this is where it's going to be. And it's just, it's not meant for somebody to say, well, if it says the storm's going to be here at 2:03 and it's here at 2:02, all right, well, the idea is just to give you a general idea as to how that's going. But yeah, the Weather Service does that, TV weather, they do that as well, because they, you know, we have these, I shouldn't say we, cause I'm not on TV anymore, but you know, you have these little graphics that pop up and these little windows, and it'll tell you where everything is going to be. But it is truly all about making the public aware of what's going on, because in these instances, you're talking about thunderstorms, and if people aren't paying attention and they're outside,
yeah,
or God forbid on a golf course or the lake or whatever it is, you want people to know, like, hey, okay, this says 2:03, it is now 1:57. I need to get my behind off the sixth hole, or I need to get off the water, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And that's, so that's what it's for.
It's all about safety. All right, thanks. Let's go to Sandy in Rotterdam. Sandy, hello.
Hi, how you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. How you doing?
Great. I just wanted to call in about that red sky in the night and morning little limerick thing there. And
yeah.
I did a lot of fishing in South Florida a few years back, and it was, we always said, red sky at night, sailor's delight. Red sky in the morning, sailors take warning.
That's true.
Much did pan out.
Yeah, that's actually the phrase. My father, he wasn't accused of being wound too tightly. He would say, you know, red sky at night, sailors take fright. Red sky at morning, put out the awning. I don't know where he got
gotcha.
It, but it was just a joke. But
he made up his own.
Yeah.
That's better. I like that one, too.
All right,
but you know what? It seems to be about the same for up here in the Northeast now.
I think
when
so.
You look out there, you know, with that beautiful sunset, and I think, anyway.
Any truth to that,
anyway,
Jason?
Thanks.
I mean, is there any truth to that old phrase that Sandy brings up?
It's not something that, you know, I go fishing in South, although unfortunately not lately, but I do go fishing in South Florida, either just offshore West Palm, or sometimes we'll go over to the Bahamas, and it's not something that I would say, okay. I'd say, hey, you know, we're not going to take a 35-foot boat 90 miles over to Rosie's in the Abacos chain based just on that. But the fact that we would be going east if the sky was red to the east, that could be a good thing because, you know, everything is, depending on the time of year,
yeah,
if it was a cold front or something like that, it was pushing out, that would be good. Now, if it was during hurricane season, not so much, because those things move west. So it's more of a just an adage. It's not something that anybody, especially if you're on the water and on the ocean, you never, ever in a million years would want to rely solely on that.
Okay.
Oh, for goodness sakes, no. No, those were my old fishing grounds, too. And I'll tell you what, best fishing in the East Coast is off of that Boynton Inlet, I tell you.
Ah, nice. Well, Sandy,
yep, that's a good spot.
Thanks a lot for the call. And when we do the fishing show, Jason, you come back. You and Sandy can shoot the breeze a while. Meantime, let's go to Fred in Averill Park. Fred, you're on.
Hi. Had a question. I've got to do a Zoom presentation in about 2 weeks, and I'm talking about water resources within Rensselaer County. I looked at what the quote average rainfall is. I think it's something like 43 inches or average precipitation. I'm assuming that what that means is literally within each square inch, an accumulation over the year of 43 inches of water would fall, either in liquid or snow form or ice or whatever. That can be yes. translated to the same amount within a square foot. You multiply that out. I was literally getting, for the section of Rensselaer County I'm talking about, I was literally getting hundreds of billions of gallons of water.
Okay.
Is my math way off, or is that within the realm of probability or possibility?
Hey, man, the numbers don't lie. You just, if you're calculating that, because, you know, the average rainfall, let's say in one particular area, is just going to be at that reporting site of 40 inches, then, yeah, if you say, well, you know, I mean, you figure just from one cloud that weighs over a million pounds, that's a heck of a lot of water yeah. that's going to be coming out of that. And then you multiply that out over the year. I mean, it's is this a scientific
incredible.
Presentation that you're doing, or?
Yes.
What
yeah.
type of a presentation,
I mean, it's,
is
it's
this?
It's the equivalent of more than half of Lake George being dumped on one particular section of Rensselaer County. We're talking about the Rensselaer Plateau. Mm. And I was just amazed yeah. that, you know, I never really thought about it until I sat down and actually calculated it out, the amount of water that can potentially yeah. fall, what that 43 inches really means in terms of gallons.
Yeah.
It is. And I'll tell you this real quickly, too. If you needed some more information, I would suggest that you call the Albany National Weather Service forecast office and talk to the hydrologist there. They're a great bunch of men and women there, and they wear a lot of different hats. But a hydrologist, which I am not, they may be able to help you if you were looking for some more information. So that's just a little kind of a side note, but they're great folks over there.
Jason Goff, we are done once again, and I guess we can just abandon the pretense of saying you'll be here in person next time, and we'll have that scotch. One of these days, the lockdown and the pandemic will end, and you'll be back. Meantime, we'll probably talk to you on the phone again in a month or two. Hey, man, thanks a lot. Good luck with the website. Once again, it's jasonsweather.com, and we'll talk to you, all right?
All right, Ray. Look forward to it.
Support comes from the Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, protecting the forests, wetlands, shorelines, and ridges that protect Lake George permanently. Projects, events, and news at lglc.org. At New England Hydroponics, offering a full selection of hydroponic supplies, organic soils, and indoor gardening equipment, located in Auburn, Marlboro, Seekonk, and Southampton, Massachusetts, the indoor gardening experts, nehydro.com. Once again, thanks to Jason Goff for being here. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Zachary Malloy, our engineer. Phones answered by Carl Blackwood, our producers, Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, we will answer your tech questions, your computer questions. Tony Yang and Mark Bogosian will be here. That's tomorrow at 2. Right now, stand by for The Book Show.